Welcome to Building Leaders, everyone, the show about the creative geniuses that are building our world. My name is Angelos Nicolaou. I'm the director at Sector and your host. Our guest today is Mr. Aref Balwan, director of digitization for CCC, CEO for CCC Startup, and strategy officer for the World Economic Forum. You wouldn't know it, but Aref is actually a really humble guy. It could be that he grew up in one of the most difficult time periods for his home country, Lebanon. Or that he has been working toward the digitization of the construction industry for the past 20 plus years, which, let's all admit, is no easy task. Aref was inspiring throughout the conversation, practical and infectiously optimistic. There are some great stories and a lot of great tips in this episode, and we hope you enjoy listening. So if you can introduce yourself and the position in the company that you're in.
Yeah, my name is Aref Balwan. I work for CCC Group. CCC is one of the largest 20 contractors on the international records of construction by ENR and the largest in the Middle East. I lead many entities in CCC. My official title for CCC Group is Manager Digital Transformation for the group. But this entails many tasks, and I do also lead I'm a CEO of CC Startup, which is a subsidiary of CC Group. That's very quickly what I do.
Amazing. And Aref, you're from Lebanon originally?
Yes, I'm Lebanese with a Greek. I'm a Greek national, but I'm originally Lebanese citizen, yeah. I grew up in Lebanon. I was born and raised during the civil war, unfortunately, in Lebanon. And I left Lebanon in 1998. I moved to Greece back then.
Was that after you did your college degree?
Yeah, I've graduated from, now it's called Lebanese American University, LAU.
Right.
I've studied computer science. And then I take many executive development programs from INSEAD and other institutions while I'm here.
So you studied computer science, but you switched and you came over to construction. And that was your very first career move? You never worked in computer science?
I worked for less than a year. And then I joined CC as an IT administrator. We had a project in the south of Lebanon cement factory, which I was the automation engineer and doing programming and the infrastructure. I was taking care of all that for like 2 years. I loved the programming a lot. And back then, we invested a lot in developing our back-end systems. And the absence of a mature IT system for the construction industry, we had to do our in-house development at the time, which I was leading a big part of it. And I moved to Greece to the headquarters of CC to lead a development group, software engineers, civil mechanical engineer for implementation. So we developed disruptive technology for the construction. So I started as programming and IT solution. Then I moved to futuristic technology and disruptive in the construction, 3D printing, modularization, renewable, etc., which was a career shift for me. But I started, as you said.
That's incredible. Was it always a passion of yours to go into the construction industry, or did it just happen? You know, there was a job opening and you went for it.
To be honest, I wasn't targeting construction specifically. I was targeting a place where I can not only develop my skills as IT, but also deal with people and change management. You know, so I was looking for a place where I can use both. I like people. I strongly believe technology without people, there's no use of it. So in big organization like CC, if you work in technology, it's more, I see it as not only innovation and IT and disruptive technology, but also change management, how you can change this organization, how can you transform it, etc. So this was the objective more than the industry itself. I think it was more coincident that I went into construction origin.
That, I mean, it's great. You know, we are a company that is helping others digitize, and we certainly do see the challenges. You've been with CCC for over 20 years, right? Yeah. Which is incredible on its own. You know, lately, we see people changing career paths every 2 years. So that shows dedication in itself. But throughout your career there, did you face challenges in what you're trying to do, what you're trying to accomplish in terms of digitization? Or was it a smoother ride? Would you say that's what kept you there for as long as it did?
I think digitization is never smooth in general. When it comes to construction industry, it's extremely challenging. It's far more than other industries. It's no wonder, Angelos, that the construction industry is one of the least digitized industry in the world. if you look at the production norms, productivity norms of the construction, it haven't improved for the last 50 years. Unlike manufacturing, automotive almost doubled. So clearly this says something about the whole industry, that any digitization, any disruptive technology is, you will find resistance in the construction industry more than others. You can see it as a problem. I can see it as a challenge. So I think this is part of the journey. And this is what makes it interesting. And you can differentiate yourself if you succeed.
I was going to ask, how does that make you feel working in a construction company in an industry that it is one of the least digitized industries in the world? You sort of answered it by saying, you know, I see it as a challenge. Looking back, do you think that you could have done something, not you in particular, but perhaps IT teams could have done something different, something better? Were there some lessons that you learned that you can take moving forward?
Yeah, to your first part of the question, I think Einstein used to say, had it been easy, everyone would have done it. So depending what do you want, if you want a challenging job that, and you go into an industry that is not disruptive, then you can be a differentiator more than other industries. But definitely also inherit the risk of not succeeding. So it's a balance. As for the challenge that we faced during, definitely in the construction specifically, change management is one of the, and the cultural aspects and the average age of the engineers in construction makes it far more difficult and challenging to change anything. Second, the project type nature. So every project, you have a new team that they're working together. Some of them are meeting each other for the first time. And by the time you create this culture of disruptive technologies and implement new things, it might be too late to catch. Because if you take any transformation in any industry, usually it's 3 to 5 years journey. Any digital transformation.
Right.
How can you do that in a project that is 2 to 3 years?
Yeah.
And that's why in CC we took the corporate approach rather than project. So how could we do something that is sustainable beyond the project? How can we create the ecosystem for disruption rather than only relying on one person or one project? So this is, it's a totally different ball game.
How do you do that?
Look, when it comes to software, it's easier. When I started my career with developing software at IT and implementing them, it's always been challenging, but not as much as when you start touching on the construction technologies.
Right.
When you start challenging assumptions, here is the big challenge. So let's say, let me give you a comparison. If you go and automate processes within the organization to digitize something, that's far easier, although it's very challenging, but it's still far easier to implement than go and bring something like 3D printing or modularization, or try to bring any technology, IoT workforce with helmets, try to bring additive manufacturing, anything that is at the core of technology. This is where really you find the biggest resistance, not only resistance internally, but also regulatory, the client approval,
unions,
etc. So what we've done to answer the question differently in CCC, I strongly believe, it all started, you know, we're partner of the World Economic Forum. And one of the title I hold is Strategy Officer, if you probably see it.
It's really impressive.
Part of the forum, thanks. Part of the forum, we initiate many projects under infrastructure and urban development industry. Many projects to like risk management, the workforce gap analysis, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the projects we launched was the future of construction. It was 3 years project. With BCG Group and 39 leaders in the world, we developed different methodology and different hypothetical scenarios what the world would look like in 2050 from a construction perspective. So we took the last three scenarios of the last year report, which you can find online, by the way, if you Google Future of Construction, World Economic Forum, three scenarios where the world might not only be one of these scenarios, might be a combination. And the scenario is, by definition, is an extreme. So it's a theoretical stage. But the whole idea of creating these scenarios is to roll back to today and see what the implications, what you need to do, what things you need to disrupt, what technology needs to evolve in order to reach that scenario should this materialize. So the three scenarios were building a virtual world where construction is run by robots, AI, virtual reality, augmented reality, etc. Okay, so I can sit in Kivisia and run a project in Saudi Arabia. We have single malt Scotch whiskey and watch everything. They're being
now you're talking our language.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of being down there, so it's that's the theoretical scenario. Another theoretical scenario was, let's say, God forbid, and there is one time the NATO warned of cyber war. Now, that might take. Let's say cyber attack takes place and the world is disconnected, which is, by the way, one of the hypothetical scenarios many speak about. Then we would go more into factory runs the world. Everything happens in a factory environment. That's an extreme scenario of modularization. And the job of the contractor is only to assemble these units as a puzzle.
Right.
So what would be the implication? The third scenario, God forbid, an environmental crisis takes place in the world.
Right.
And everything is driven environmentally rather than only quality.
Probably caused by construction, by the way, since we contribute 40% to global CO2 emissions.
Exactly. We're unfortunately one of the highest, and we should live more up to our commitment to the 17 goals of the United Nations, especially sustainability and a greener world. So when we finished that report, we deduced 30 technologies that needs to evolve by 2050 in the construction sector. We thought, as part of what we call the President Initiative, the CC President, Mr. Sam Khoury, we launched initiative by selecting a group of like 40, 50 engineers in CC, brilliant engineer, young. Yeah, most of them are civil, mechanical, electric engineer. Their attitude to technology is very positive.
Yeah.
And they made, we asked them to come up with ideas and on how we can disrupt the construction sector, and choose that this idea is applicable to one or more of these 30 technologies. So we scoped it for them and say how we can implement this in CC. What do they need? What funding? What pilots, etc.? And then we approved first at 10, but ended up being 15 projects. And we didn't only give the environment for that project to succeed and the funding and the pilot project, but we also established for each project a committee of diversified subject matter experts.
Right.
Who would help the leader of that initiative to test these technologies and implement it. Then after 2 years, also part of the forum, we made a commitment to help startups in the regions where we operate.
Yeah.
And these startups, usually as part of our CSR policy, that we operate in the Gulf region, we operate in Kazakhstan, we have offices in Greece. How can we help the local community? One of the best things is to support entrepreneurs, be it monetary, be it give them the field to test their technology, be it align them with CC. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is that basically we shortlisted a big list of startups, and we chose what's relevant for the construction industry. And suddenly I realized, which was not planned, that many of these technologies that the startups are focusing on fall under the committees and the project and the pilot that we were doing earlier.
Mm.
So besides the committee, the leader, and the pilot project and the technology selected, the four dimensions we had for, we brought the startup on board as part of the team. And this was amazing. So it's beyond CSR it became. What we've done is that we strongly believe one of the reasons why the construction industry, one of the reasons, there are many, is this digitized, is the fact that the contractors are too traditionalist to disrupt their own industry.
Right.
While technology provider or startups lack the domain knowledge and opportunity to test their technology at large scale. So by having this, the committee mentoring, the committee represents diversified subject matter experts like HR, engineer, IT, HSE, etc. These committees would be mentoring the startup and bridge the domain knowledge gap the startup has.
Mm-hmm.
The startup would source innovation, having the startup on board would source innovation to CC, and we would pilot a project, sponsor it, so the startup with the committee would test this technology at large scale and refine it. And so we're like strategic partner for the startup, and we help them mature their technology and gain the domain expertise. And this is really where it starts being fruitful.
Yeah.
And we've done many successes, probably you read about using that approach, and we're still doing that.
So let's get this straight. First of all, you pick the team from within your company that are the most forward-thinking, innovative engineers in your company. Then you went out to the community, you found the best technologies, the best startups, let's say, either invested in them or gave them the ground to work with your company. You also worked with the World Economic Forum to identify which are these technologies that will help the construction industry develop, that will help contribute to worldwide indices that should improve, like sustainability, for instance. The question is, this took you a total right now of 2-3 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's the last 2 years it slowed down because of the construction industry and now Corona. We're still operating in this method, but slow down. The peak was 3 years back.
Yeah.
We started all this like 4 years back.
Yeah.
And the peak, we've delivered many successful projects like 3 years back, but still the momentum is going. But now, of course, there's more challenge now with Corona because of obvious problems that this entail. But exactly what you said is very accurate.
Looking back, how would you say this is going for you, or how has this progressed? What are some of the advantages that you've seen come out of this? And perhaps what are some of the lessons as well that you learned from this experience?
To be honest, it went far beyond what we expected it will go. We thought that these projects, first people called us crazy to try to start with 10 projects. They said, okay, why don't you focus on 2-3 projects?
Yeah.
When it comes to technology, we learned one thing, that usually the success rate is very low. Mm-hmm. So we thought we start 10, assuming that we'll succeed with one or two. That would be the success rate. But luckily, we succeeded with most of them.
Yeah.
And the reason why we succeed is exactly bringing all the players, all the stakeholders on board, and the collaborative approach between the startup, the committees, the subject matter expert, and the pilot, which we didn't know is going to work that well, to be honest. So that's why we started with many projects.
So what does success look like for you? Is it finishing project on time, on budget, safer?
Very good question. For CCC, one of the most important pillar to judge success is based on the safety record that we have. This is really our pillar. And many of the technologies that we implemented, like IoT workforce, probably you read about our collaboration with many startups in the field,
right,
is to improve on safety. Mm-hmm. So if we can improve statistically 1 per 100% on safety, which we did much more than that, that's a big success for us. If you bring everybody safe home, that's really the main pillar. Mm-hmm. Second would be twofold, go in parallel. One is our commitment to environment, and we have succeeded with one of the startups in a few places, and we're trying to scale up that success. We can talk about detail.
Yeah.
And third is driving client satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Driving client satisfaction is delivering project on time with high quality, et cetera, et cetera. Well, until the moment, except few technologies, it didn't help in that direction. Mm-hmm. Some technologies do help in that direction. Yeah. For instance, any technology that you would implement that improves productivity or improves quality, et cetera, et cetera, it will help in that direction. So I wouldn't be able to tell you that all that this technology contributed to these three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
But definitely, some of them contribute to one or more of these. And some of them might not, and this is the problem, and some of them you might not be able to quantify the added value to any of these. But the fact that you start researching that technologies and sourced innovation to CCC, that's the success by its own, because you created a culture of change, accepting change.
Right.
You've educated your employees internally. You've motivated these high morale employees that are looking forward for new challenge, you know, like yourselves. Now, millennial generation with civil engineers, they don't want to do construction business as usual. When you engage this millennial generation in this initiative, even if it doesn't pay off as quality, price, safety, the journey is basically part of the ROI, of the morale boosting.
You want cool tech, right? You want cool tech to work in a company.
Exactly. And this is one of the major, and this is another report we did with the forum, is the workforce talent gap in the construction. One of the reasons, now if you make a survey in Cyprus and ask new generation in high school, how many they dream to be in construction industry, you don't find many.
Right.
Even in the United States, there was an article about less engineer coming out in the construction. So the construction industry is also not attracting new talent because we're doing the same thing.
So there's two things there, right? First of all, we're not attracting new talent, I mean, which is pretty sad. But number two, we're not attracting almost 50% of the workforce, which is women. So there's two really important parts to that as well.
Because we work a lot on that part. But to finish on the first part, the attracting the right talent, one of the major reasons is that we've been doing things some of the construction trades like carpentry or masonry, they exist thousands of years back. And the practices, you'll be shocked. You know better than I do. You're a civil engineer, guys. And you know that many of these practices has been there for thousands of years.
Right.
So unless you bring this culture, you have to accept failure to succeed. Mm. It's not that I can, if the contractor would think, unless I have a quantifiable ROI implementing that technology, I wouldn't implement it, then nothing will be implemented because nobody can guarantee a quantifiable ROI, and then nothing will be disrupted.
Yeah.
You have to accept failure in some area to succeed in others. So right. Yes, to summarize, much of what we're doing could be quantified,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully will be implemented at large scale
with actual others numbers, right?
Yes, of course. Especially when it comes to renewable energy, for instance, we've done. I can speak about certain project or modularization or 3D printing or many things. Hopefully, it can be quantified in our IoT workforce. Now, for let's say COVID-19. With IoT workforce, you can implement contact tracking, social distancing, so which we never thought of before.
We implemented, we never thought we needed now, it.
Exactly. But now, given that we have already 3 years experience in that, now it's far easier for us to implement it than other contractors.
Correct.
You've asked a very good question before, and I didn't answer you regarding women in construction.
Yeah.
We have created years back a program in CC called Women Empowerment Program,
mm-hmm.
and to put KPIs and minimum quota that which we don't like to use the word quota, it should be natural, but unfortunately in construction it's not natural, it's a man job, perceived to be. So what we've done is that we looked at many trades within CC, and so which trades are easier to penetrate, although we're penetrating all trades now. You find site engineers, women in CC, in some places, in countries and places where they accept to live, because some places, it's not always
the easiest.
Sometimes the construction industry does not accept as a culture, which we're changing a lot that, and we need to do more. But some places that many engineers wouldn't accept to live in certain condition,
right.
Desert, out of nowhere. But surprisingly, the new generation now, with millennial generation, this is being solved, because you find many fresh graduate ladies who are up to the challenge. They go to site and they're not worried about the remoteness, et cetera, which is, this is a cultural change by its own from the employee itself, from the company itself. We looked also at what trades that we can penetrate easier. For instance, building information modeling, BIM.
Right.
In Athens, if you work at our BIM department, you find more than 90% ladies.
Huh.
We centralized BIM. We have in three countries centralized BIM service for OCC. One of them is Greece. One of the biggest ones is Greece, Athens.
Yeah.
And most of them are architects, graduate from Athens
here.
And you really walk and find the majorities are guys. Because this trade, it's living in a beautiful city like Athens.
Yeah.
And there's no excuse. So here we were biased more towards employing women.
Yeah.
We could. So whenever that's not just one example. So should we be doing more? Of course, yeah. Of course, that's a long journey. But we started, I think we're one of the leaders when it comes to women empowerment.
Mm.
And we're penetrating many places within CC for that.
It's so important, especially as we're facing labor shortages, especially as we're facing culture shifts, innovation challenges, safety challenges. We can't keep doing what we were always doing and expect change, right? I mean, we have to change the ways that we work, that we think, and our models, how we set them up.
Exactly.
The question I wanted to ask you before was, how do you go about choosing a top team? As sector, we've been to over 100 or so construction companies right now discussing their digitization journeys, discussing what their endeavors are, what their goals are going forward in the future. And some we've proceeded with, some we haven't. What we've seen is that there's always some stakeholders that are really, really important into making that work. Management buy-in is important. The operation buy-in is also important. IT teams, such as the one that you're leading, is also important. How do you go about choosing who are the most important stakeholders, in your opinion, in making digitization work within the construction industry? And what are some traits that you look for in these people to make this work?
First, many organizations adopt either a top-bottom approach for disruption. Yeah. Or bottom top approach. Historically, before we go into futuristic, because this is where I made the career shift to go to focus more into construction futuristic technologies and disruptive at the core of construction rather than only IT, which I used to do before IT automation. When IT automation, there was one article I remember saying that end user dictates technology to be used in organizations more than CIOs.
Yeah.
That was the kind of title that. If you employ 10 people in your organization, Angelus now, and they all know how to use Google Docs, you would immediately use Google Docs.
Right.
You didn't care because it does the job, although they're a competing product, but it's far easier for you to deploy something they know.
My team's so using it. They already know it. Yeah.
Exactly. So if you think about it, you can be the CEO, Angelus, but really you're not deciding on the technology. The end user is deciding and driving you. Because you're a business person and thinking, okay, I need to reach there. And okay, there are many options, but clearly this works better for my team. Let's listen to them rather than going to change management, train them on new technology, blah, blah, etc.
The fastest path that you mentioned before as well.
Exactly. And there's the bottom, the top bottom approach. In CCC, when it comes to the disruptive technology in the construction sector, 3D printing, modularization, etc., we talked about IoT workforce, etc., it was part of President Initiative. So we had the president support that I could use, at least internally, to knock on any door, as if the description is proper. And that was a way to have all ears listening to us when we started originally within a big corporate like CC. A few years back, before the downfall of the construction industry in general, we reached 210,000 labor and 22,000 staff. So with this large organization operating in like 50 countries in the world, change management is very difficult. So when you carry President Initiative with your hand, when you go to speak to everyone, you will have more ears listening to you and cooperating with you. Nevertheless, I don't believe this is enough. Yeah. You need, it's neither top-bottom nor bottom-top approach. It's both together.
Right.
And this leads me to answer your questions. So when we took this initiative, first, we democratized the process. We're in Greece, the land of democracy. So we learned that and we implemented even innovation. So the first thing, we took the vision from the president. With the World Economic Forum, BCG, and other leaders, we developed the future of construction framework and the 30 disruptive technology. We brought them to CC. We did not dictate, okay, Angelos, take this technology and go implement it there. No, we made the survey, collect all ideas from these young engineers, but scope it and link it to the president initiative in a way. So merging bottom up to top bottom. And here where we identified, when you talked about the right stakeholders on board and how you choose, what I call champion.
Mm-hmm.
They will filter themselves. When you go into this, you will realize who helped the passion, who would go out of his way, who would or her way, who would not sleep at night because this technology is not working. That's a personal thing.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not enough to motivate people by promoting them. And when it comes to innovation, monetary support is really not a big differentiator. When it comes to innovation, you need motivation to succeed. And this motivation, you create it as a culture, but it has to be the champion, the person, his or her heart into that and believe it. So I chose many, and first from these 50 engineers, it was during the meeting, because many people came with similar ideas, let's say 3D printing, five people came with it. We established committees. I could see from the first three, four, five conversations who is the right person to be the champion. We didn't call them leader because we want a collaborative approach between everybody. We don't want to hire
them. Okay. Good one.
But we call them champion and they would steer things and we would help them. So it's a combination of top-bottom and bottom-top approach. And as I said in the beginning, the most challenging thing in disrupting construction and big and large organizations in general, not only construction, is change management. And to work around change management, the champion is a key element and success criteria for this recipe.
Did you go out and look for these people? Did you go out and look for the best people in the industry and start hiring aggressively? Or did you look from within your company and then start building the culture?
No, outside, I said, the startups. Yeah, we filtered out 100 startups in the beginning in the region where we operate and shortlisted them to 10 to 20, and then we start working with some of them. That's the external element. All other resources are internal. What we've done is basically we made a before doing the survey to the like 50 engineers back then. And now we have another, by the way, establishing another committee. Now I can talk about for a different purpose. I'll tell you what's out, which is very interesting also, relate to digital transformation.
Yeah.
Regarding the origin one and this one, the starting point is we send an email from the president to all executives and regional directors in our operations to nominate young engineers who have these criteria. So they nominate. They say, Angelos and Michalis are, let's say, from Dubai, the country manager of Dubai. We say, Angelos and Michalis are forward thinkers, brilliant engineers who are on top of edge of technology. They read all about and they always come with ideas. From Athens, let's say, HR department would nominate another two people, et cetera, et cetera. So these 50 engineers are nominated originally.
Yeah.
Okay. Because who knows them better than the country manager or the functional department?
Their own people, then the people who work with them every day.
Exactly. We generate a survey and send it to them to come up with ideas. Mm. When they come up with ideas, you can filter automatically the very good ideas from the conventional idea because they're all good ideas.
Yeah.
But there are some surprisingly good ideas. So then you categorize them into 5 to 10 categories. Then you establish committees and you approve this project and assign people. And then when you start working, automatically, let's say you put 5 people on, you establish a committee of 5 people to research that technology and with that pilot, you would realize, because we have weekly calls, whatever regular calls, you would realize who's taking a natural lead, who's differentiating him or herself, who's an outlier. You would realize it. You would feel it.
Yeah.
And this is where we nominate the champion.
Yeah.
By the way, we have, if I may also, because we're doing this now.
Yeah.
Actually, this week. And during COVID-19, all companies established what's called war room to tackle mm-hmm. COVID-19
yeah.
and assuring that we are, for instance, now the on top of our priority is the CSR and the donation and the help we're doing to the countries where we operate to help government and communities with COVID-19. We have big things I can talk about if you like later. Second, bringing everybody safe. It's not a priority. It's our objective during COVID-19. Bring everybody safe, COVID-free back home. If someone has COVID, contact tracking, social distancing, quarantine, etc. And third, delivering our project despite all these challenges up to the expectation of our client and keeping our operation going. So these three things we're trying to do now during COVID-19. What we've done, we established another committee to look post COVID-19. What should we be doing differently from a digital transformation perspective?
Right.
Because COVID-19, with all the misery it created, it's an opportunity for us to disrupt more.
Mm-hmm.
We never knew we could travel so much less. We never knew we could work from home. We never knew so many things, especially in construction. Now we know it. What else we can do? And now we are in the process of establishing the committees and the topics I told you about. We did many years back. But we're calling the committee a new business model for CCC post-COVID-19 era. What would we be doing differently post-COVID-19? And this is, eventually today, I had 2 calls on that topic. So this is now the project we're working on, besides managing COVID-19, post-COVID-19, establishing the committees. And the same idea, we selected like 30 engineers nominated, and we dispatched a survey for them, and we collected around 69 ideas.
Yeah.
And now we're sorting them out, we're establishing committees, the same cycle we've done before, but now from post-COVID-19 perspective.
What I really like about this is it sounds like you are a very large organization. Yeah, driving change is a challenge. But it sounds like you sort of broke off into your own mini startup, let's say within CCC, to try to drive these initiatives. Is that right? Or
yes, of course. And that's what I do. This is my job. Now, I have many, many umbrellas. I do other things within the organization, but that's my passion.
That's right.
This way. I put more weight on that. We're trying to disrupt ourselves from within. And even 2 guys have employees in CC who created their own startups now, and we're supporting them. So the best way is to, again, back to the millennial generation and satisfying their need and passion, is if any of these gentlemen or ladies that are part of the committees we're talking about come up with a brilliant idea and they want to take it out of CC, we're not only okay with that, like, okay, most forward-thinking organization would be okay with that,
Yeah.
No, we all also embrace it and support it, be it in monetary or giving them the field or test or whatever. So yes, of course, we strongly believe disrupt yourself before you're disrupted by someone else.
Right.
So that's in healthy thinking.
It's great to see that in construction. We don't often hear that. Most companies try to do, you know, whatever they do in a company wide adoption. But I'm really liking what I hear from this, and it's sort of what we see in a lot of the technology companies where they have, you know, breakout groups. They do their own thing, and then once they establish that, they come back within the organization and, you know, try to make it work company wide. And it sounds great. Now, the question I have for you here is, you know, I've been looking at your LinkedIn profile, and I saw you've been a speaker at the UN. You obviously a strategy officer at the World Economic Forum. You've obviously had friction with people outside of the construction industry. Presumably, you've met some pretty cool people from around the world, pretty smart people from around the world. How has that experience been, and what has that friction taught you in bringing back to the construction industry? What are some of the traits that you see from outside construction that perhaps people that are not in your position can see and can learn from that?
I think it was Einstein used to say that the source of creativity is the intersection of multidiscipline.
Yeah.
So the creativity is usually you get creative and you come up with idea when you see what people who are totally different than you're doing, rather than people who are homogeneous with yourself. So what you're saying is very true. Our interaction with so many industries, so many players in different fields, made us believe more that the construction industry need to be disrupted, because it lags behind miserably compared to other industries. And you can bring many best practices. And I can give you an example. I'm sure you heard about, you know, lean construction.
Yeah.
The whole concept of lean started in Toyota and the automotive manufacturing.
Correct.
And the construction industry didn't do much. They stole the IN methodology and customized and implemented in a method statement or whatever for the as project management methodology for the construction. But the lean concept was not created. It was succeeded in the manufacturing automotive, and then it was brought to inherited. So this Correct. Is an example, and there are tons of other ideas that you can bring to construction, given that construction is behind. So that the recipe works, whether you're behind or no. But given that you're behind, it's additional reason to go look at what other industries are doing.
Yeah.
And we do so by being part of forums, initiatives, and these think tanks.
Do you have an audience through these very large organizations? Do you have an audience with governments from around the world, with government entities?
Probably, yeah, with all of them. But the majority of the government, the public sector audience comes with the World Economic Forum, because the World Economic Forum is a private-public collaborative platform to improve the state of the world. So this is the place where the public and private comes together.
Yeah.
Okay. And now we're eventually working on two projects with public entities to develop what would be a stimulus package for the construction sector that have a social impact, not only to save the construction, but also to save the society and the whole industry. So how all this relates, what players you have to bring from public and private, bridging the gap. You know, the construction is one of the most industries that overlap with public. Now, many governments in the world lack the liquidity to build new infrastructure projects, while we know that there's a huge need, even in developed countries.
Yeah.
In European countries, there's a huge need for infrastructure projects. In the US, for instance, even more than Europe. And the lack of liquidity, this is where the partnership between the private and public sector excels, like PPP, BOT, and there are many financing models that can bring multilateral development bank with public entities, with construction sector, with engineering, bringing all players for the good of society, of a human being.
Yeah.
So yes, definitely, this is in the construction sector specifically. It's, I wouldn't say it's a good thing only, it's a prerequisite for large construction.
Do you think
in Greece there are so many BOTs and PPPs that were very successful?
Yeah.
And we could see the construction and the change in the last years in Greece, for instance.
We often hear in construction that government is not doing enough to help us digitize, for instance. We often hear that nowadays, where some governments are mandating the use of BIM in the UK, in the UAE, I think it's for a specific size of projects. And companies are saying, and individuals are saying, you know, finally, the government mandated this, and now we can start digitizing. But we see other industries, like the tech industry, for instance, that disrupts and changes the whole model, and then the government is trying to catch up. Do you think that we should be waiting for the government to help us or try to disrupt and change and have the government try to catch up?
Take YouTube or Airbnb. What would these companies, YouTube, for instance, require to disrupt the industry at the time? Nothing.
Right.
YouTube. Airbnb, very minimal regulation, and regulation followed. You could rent your apartment in Athens on Airbnb without the government knowing. And then the government would follow to make a regulation only to tax you.
Right.
So it's not to help you. And the construction is a totally different ball game. There are three things I can think of that the government is required, not only a support, required, and the engagement of the government is highly required. First, one of the major problems in disrupting a construction industry is the risk inherited by deploying a new technology.
Mm.
Okay, let's say you deploy 3D printing. Okay, what would be the risk if something goes wrong? You deploy IoT workforce.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many risks in implementing new technologies that the contractors cannot inherit this risk alone. It has to be distributed on all stakeholders, starting with the developer. For large construction companies, it's the government, usually the public sector, to the engineering, to the consultant, to the contractor, to everybody. So there should be a share, and this is one of the projects we worked on, a shared risk methodology of inheriting the risk of implementing new technology. That's first. Second, regulatories. You cannot now use building material that's environmentally healthy, let's say, if you don't have a permit.
Right.
And if you're going to wait 3 years to get the permit, as we say,
you won't do it.
you finish the project before you get anything, okay? Third, the overhead cost behind implementing this technology at the start. And ultimately, technology has to pay for its use. Otherwise, it has to be commercially viable. We all know that. But at the beginning, when you want to test it, you have to fund it. Because that's something new, you're investing here, you don't know if it's going to work, you run it in parallel. We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars sponsoring pilot projects without knowing if it's going to have ROI. So who's going to fund that with the profit margin going down of the construction and the whole industry collapsing? So there's three aspects. Again, risk sharing of deploying new technology, regulation, supporting forward thinker for the construction, be it in material and equipment being used, and et cetera, et cetera. And third, monitoring. So more than any other industry, the public-private collaboration and partnership in disrupting is required to have it at large scale.
In your opinion, knowing these people, how do we influence them to be a little bit more involved in the construction industry? Is it more media exposure? I mean, you're doing a lot of that through social media. You're posting articles constantly. You have a big following on LinkedIn. You're pretty good at that game, but most people in construction are not. Is that what we should be doing more? Getting the word out there a little bit more, influencing people, getting to know more about our issues? Or do you think it's going to be a more natural approach? Let's say, obviously, now sustainability, a green approach is more prevalent than ever in other times. You know, we live in more peaceful times. We don't have wars to worry about, or that many wars to worry about, let's say. So we have started to focus on sustainability, just to take one of the areas. And if you start looking at sustainability, you start looking at, you know, who are the biggest emitters of CO2 gas emissions, let's say, to the world, and you start seeing construction, and then you go after it. Do you think it's going to be a more gradual change, or do you think that we, as the construction industry, can do more to influence these people?
PR is always good, Angus. You know, more PR is always required. It's always helpful to create awareness. But do you think really governments don't know the CO2 being emitted by construction industry? Not construction, the construction. They know. They don't know the safety record of the construction industry. They know. So if we take it from environment perspective, the impact should be on the top of the agenda of government, public sector. If we take it from safety perspective, it should be on the top of the agenda naturally, without you lobbying for it, of the public sector. And if we take it from cost perspective, especially in the economic crisis that we will be seeing, unfortunately, post-COVID-19, this should be on top of the agenda as well. Let me give you an idea. If you go to any European country or any place in the world and use the metro station, with the lack of disruption in the construction industry, there's an overrun in cost. Take, let's say, the Berlin airport as an example, I think.
Yeah, one of the worst.
In 10 years, or one of the worst. Okay, who's paying? Who is paying for the overrun in that project?
Isn't it
the taxpayer? Exactly. So you and I are paying the lack of productivity and improvement from our own pocket.
Right.
So we're the stakeholder. We're at the end of the day, the service is rendered to us. When I use the metro in Athens, when I use the toll station, when you use any service, park, you take your kids to a park in Kvisia, there's a cost associated with all these projects. And yeah. Someone's paying.
Yeah.
Money wouldn't rain. Someone is paying. Taxpayers are paying. So that's first. Second, safety. If any technology that would improve safety, if any technology that improve environment, so yes, definitely public sector should have been doing this for a long time, should be looking at the construction from not only a construction industry, from operation and maintenance. If you build now a sustainable building with taking into all the standards in the world to improve on many aspects and environment, be it water, be it heating, be it etc. If you calculate the operating cost, operation and maintenance of that building, that would not only balance the overrun in construction when it comes to putting certain measures to have a greener building, that would even be 100 times more, even financially.
Yeah.
And if you know the project in Amsterdam, Edge Building, how much you save on energy, how much you save on water, how much you save in so many aspects. Someone has to do this calculation.
Yeah.
It cannot be releasing job for the cheapest. You cannot disrupt the construction. You cannot improve the environment. You cannot improve safety. You can do nothing by only having the cheapest contractor take the job.
Yeah.
Because you're sub-optimizing. You're only thinking for construction phase. You're not thinking about operation and maintenance and longer phase.
Yeah. So we should get the word out there more. And presumably with the use of technologies, hopefully with innovative cultures within companies and with an increase in the construction industry supply chain transparency, we'll start to see more and more of that word get to the ears of the government and then hopefully see some of that influence come back into the construction industry so that we see high growth in that respect and a higher change, shift in digitization. Now, you're someone that has been chasing digitization for quite a while in the construction industry. Do you see a shift in the latest years? Do you see a trajectory changing a little bit during the latest years in comparison to the past? And if so, why is it emergent technologies?
Yeah, definitely we saw a positive vibes in the last few years and promising vibe. My worry now is post-COVID-19, the cost challenge and the whole industry will even drive more cost being the solo criteria to drive everything, which will invest less in innovation and in disruptive technology, will invest less in renewable and green energy. We will forget our commitments as not only as a construction industry, as the whole world.
Because we're worried about surviving.
Exactly. But I don't think COVID-19 will kill humanity. What might kill humanity is an environmental crisis.
Right.
So we should not let COVID-19 make us forget our commitments for improvement. I'm afraid it's going to play somewhere negative impact on that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what we're trying to balance and see. And that's what we've created another committee now to think post-COVID-19. How can we do things differently? Yeah. I think outside the box, rather than being driven by only cost and cash flow and all the challenges that all the construction industry is living now. Exactly. Not to forget our purpose and our mission.
That's a great message. So to end, we like to ask a question to all of our guests on the podcast, and that's, how would you like to see construction change in 10 years from now?
If you ask if we can change everything we talked about, like the three scenarios, we can have more modularization, more virtual world, more green world, that would be great. If we have to choose, we have to choose environmental things.
Yeah.
Because that's much more important than anything. Mm-hmm. We should, if we can do everything, we should focus our energy on more environment and safety than anything else. Because that's the real threat we live today.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We really do hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you think that it delivered value to you, please share it with a friend who will appreciate it as well. Thanks.